Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A once prominent figure at City Hall begins to serve his prison term.
The administration is entitled to its own opinion, but not its own facts.
Despite defiant efforts from City Council, the ShotSpotter contract comes to a close. Chicago's Deputy Mayor of Community Safety tells us what's next. And the Chicago Teachers Union's no confidence vote in public schools leader Pedro Martinez. And now to some of today's top stories. From arguably the most powerful person at City Hall to inmate number 53698-424, former Alderman Ed Burke reported to federal prison today. Burke is in the custody of the Federal Bureau of Prisons in Thompson, Illinois, nearly 150 miles west of Chicago. Back in June, the longtime Chicago alderman was sentenced to 2 years in federal prison plus a $2 million fine after his conviction on 13 counts of racketeering, bribery, and attempted extortion. 80-year-old Burke also lost his $96,000 annual city pension shortly after his sentencing this summer. Family members of an Indiana man who died while in police handcuffs say he used a familiar phrase before his death: "I can't breathe." They have the support of National Civil Rights Attorney Ben Crump, who's calling on officials to release the body cam footage of the incident.
And if America learned anything in the tragic killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, that is when a citizen says, "I can't breathe," the first time, we should believe them and we should take it seriously.
Attorneys say Riker Earle experienced two seizures on September 8th, prompting a 911 call. But they say the situation escalated when police and EMTs arrived, leading to excessive force. Earle, who also suffers from asthma, was handcuffed and pinned face down. He died 2 days later. A social media post from the Jasper County Sheriff says Earle family attorneys are making false or misleading claims about the incident and intend to release the body camera footage once the Indiana State Police investigation has cleared them to do so. If the northern section of DuSable Lakeshore Drive is on your evening or nighttime route, you might want to find an alternative this week. CDOT says crews are still resurfacing between Irving Park Road and LaSalle Drive. Lane closures will only affect southbound traffic with significant impacts starting at 7 p.m. each night this week, followed by complete overnight lane closures at 9 p.m. and reopening at 6 a.m. It's expected to be complete by late October. For specifics on which ramps will be affected, check out our website. Up next, one-on-one with Chicago's Deputy Mayor of Community Safety on what comes after ShotSpotter right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is exploring other options for first responder technology. That's after the city's contract with gunshot detection system ShotSpotter expired Sunday, with sensors starting to be removed today. The contract came to an end despite an effort by some city council members to save the controversial system, saying it's a crucial tool for police.
If one life is saved with gunshot detection technology, then it is absolutely worth having. How can Brandon Johnson, the mayor of the most American of American cities, put a price tag on saving lives?
Saying that we spent $100 million on ShotSpotter is a lie when the facts say $53 million.
Joining us now with more on what comes next is Garion Gatewood, Chicago's Deputy Mayor of Community Safety. We also invited Ralph Clark, the CEO of Sound Thinking, that is the company behind ShotSpotter, but he declined. Deputy Mayor, welcome back. Good. Thank you for joining us. Good to see you again.
Happy to be here.
So yesterday, the city issued a request for information, obviously different from a request for proposal, for first responder technology. What kind of technology might that entail?
Well, we're excited to see what's out there. I think, you know, for far too long, we've been pigeonholed with one form of technology. And it's up to us to kind of see what's out there in the atmosphere so we can understand what better technology can serve the people of the city of Chicago.
So you're aware that other kinds of technology exist. Sound thinking isn't the only player in this game.
No, absolutely not, right? And I know some people may think they are, and I think, you know, that is a mistake. So we want to see everything that's out there, everything that's available to deliver on the promises to the people of the city of Chicago to actually bring that safety we're looking for.
It seems like this sort of reference to the kind of technology as first responder technology, is this sort of a new term? Is this something that Sound Thinking introduced as it fought to save its contract?
Well, that was a new terminology for them, but not for us, right? We've always looked at how we help our first responders, not only our police department, our fire departments, and even our OEMC call takers in the 911 call center, because those folks are the first folks who actually hear from people on those scenes. So really thinking about how we pull together technology that can not only help our first responders, but also drive crime down throughout the city.
Why not start this process months ago when plans to cancel the contract were first announced?
Yeah, well, we started the conversations months ago, right? We started exploring conversations through our working group and our partners to understand what do we want to see, what can we explore, and what could be next. Now, the RFI coming out gives us time to really understand what is in the atmosphere and what can be developed for the city of Chicago. And that also gives us time to really understand who can be a big player in the city and help us out.
Your office also started a working group to develop alternatives to ShotSpotter. Their first meeting was in August. Is that accurate?
Well, the first official meeting of the entire group, but members of the group have been meeting plenty of times before that so they can have a better understanding of not just alternatives to that technology, but alternatives in general to understand what can we be doing different, what technology is out there, what can we be doing for victims and survivors of crime, and what can we be doing in other spaces as well. So it wasn't ever just about that particular technology or that company.
What are the goals and the metrics for this group? How do you know that, will they deliver a report at some point? What's the plan?
Well, their plan and their goals are simple. They're going to work together to bring recommendations to the mayor, to the administration, and help us build out the goals of what we're looking for, not only in this RFI, because that's already out, but also what we're looking for in a technology partner if we go that route.
Are there any concerns that any new technology will also come from a private company, and that could also lead to some of the challenges that already existed with ShotSpotter or with Sound Thinking, for example, Sound Thinking obviously being the company that owns and operates ShotSpotter. Are they profiting from taxpayers? Data inconsistency, not having full access to the data because they're a private company. Are there any of those concerns?
Yeah, there's always those concerns, and I think this is why it's going to be important as we build out through the RFI process into the RFP process what we require of those companies to be true partners with the city of Chicago. If you want to be a partner with the city of Chicago, you show up and work together to bring safety. We don't bring fear-mongering. We want you to bring safety to the city of Chicago in partnership.
So Sound Thinking began deinstalling the ShotSpotter sensors today, and they said that they were planned to respond to the city's RFI for this technology, and they've in fact offered a 48% discount on the contract. That's what you're hearing as well.
Well, I heard that in the news. They didn't tell us that directly. So I heard that in the news, and they also asked for a 15-month contract on that. So it sounded more like a sole source contract that they were looking for, with the understanding that there's other technology in the market. We need to be able to give other people a chance to sit at the table with the city of Chicago to deliver on the promises that are made.
In a statement, Chicago Police Department says, quote, CPD frequently adjusts our public safety efforts based on the needs of our residents and the resources available to us. As we move forward, we remind residents to call 911 with as much information and detail as possible when they hear loud reports that could resemble gunfire. It's imperative that we all do our part to keep the city safe and protect our families. Gary, and many Chicagoans are reluctant to dial 911. What can the city do to address that? And is that a result of the real lack of trust that exists between residents and police officers?
Yeah, but I think a lot of that trust is being built back, right? I think the work that is happening between the Chicago Police Department, some community members being very intentional with the leadership of Superintendent Larry Snelling and the partnership he has with this administration, our office and the mayor in particular, how we show up in communities. And yes, we want people to call 911. Yes, we want police to show up, and we want them to be a part of the community. You know, when we talk about community policing, the reality of it is that needs to be a part of the fabric of the work that happens in the city. And we know they can't do it alone. And we know that safety is not just the responsibility of the Chicago Police Department, but it's a responsibility of everyone in the city. So it's not just how they respond there. It's how we work together to bring that safety.
There were 33 votes for an ordinance that would have given the police superintendent the power to extend the ShotSpotter contract. Mayor's office has said that this ordinance has no legal weight. But what does it tell you that many members of the city council were, you know, split on this issue, 33 to 14, but also that they were split from the mayor on this issue?
Well, I don't think that says anything about their relationship with the mayor. What I do think it says is they have concerns, and we can address those concerns together. And this is, again, why we have an RFI, to see what technology options are out there, because we can look beyond what we currently have. We owe that to the people of Chicago to look beyond what we currently have. Yes, we have crime trending in the right directions, but we want to expand on that, and we want to continue to bring crime down and continue to explore options.
Is the RFI process is sort of a reflection of how this Sound Thinking ShotSpotter contract came to be for the city of Chicago in the first place?
You know, that's a great question. The contract came into place some time ago, well before our administration. And I can tell you, I can promise you that conversation wasn't as open and as transparent as this one will be with the RFI process, with working groups, with engagement with communities, because people need to know what the options are out there. That's the commitment this mayor has made to this city. That's the commitment the entire administration has made to this city. We want this to be an inclusive process.
You mentioned the working group, inclusive process. Who's on this working group?
A good mixture of folks. Yeah. A good mixture of folks. Community leaders, law enforcement, street outreach organizations, violence interrupted leaders, city employees, non-city employees. And we're going to continue to grow faith leaders as well. We're going to continue to grow to bring people together, some elected officials too. We really want to continue to grow on this working group. And we really want to take this conversation to communities that have been impacted by violence so their voices can be heard consistently, so they can really see what some of the options are that we can bring to the table.
Part of the concern and part of the argument from folks who have supported keeping ShotSpotter has been, you know, there is still crime in our communities, and there have been conflicting reports about how much it works, of course. What do you say to some of those folks who say we need to be doing everything we can and let's keep it?
What I would say to them is I agree we should be doing everything we can. But I would also say is if you look at how the Chicago Police Department continues to show up, along with our partners and along with the other work that we continue to do, you see that crime is trending in the right direction. Obviously, those numbers alone don't bring the safety that is needed. But I can promise you the way people felt safe one day with this technology, that feeling didn't change overnight, right? Someone turning off the speakers in their neighborhood and in their communities didn't change that feeling of safety overnight. What is going to change that feeling is how we invest in people, how we bring crime down, and how we hold folks accountable. And we can only do that together in partnership.
This will be. The mayor has not vetoed this ordinance that was passed last week, correct?
Correct.
Okay. As of today, he still has not. But if and when he does, as he has said he would, this will be the first mayoral veto since 2006. With such a defiant city council, how do you think the mayor will continue to be able to work with aldermen?
Well, he's had a great relationship working with aldermen. He'll continue to do that. He'll continue to deliver on every promise he's made, not only through his campaign, but to the people of the city of Chicago. So those relationships will continue to grow and continue to get better, because just like those aldermen and the mayor, we all have a responsibility to deliver not only to our constituents, but all 2.7 million people in the city.
Companies have until November 1st to give submissions for this RFI. What's next after that?
After the RFI, we review what comes from there, and we start the RFP process, right? So we're really looking forward to what comes next in this. We're really looking forward to seeing what options are out there to really see how technology has advanced over the last few years and how we can help continue to bring safety up and the crime trends down.
Okay. Deputy Mayor of Community Safety, Gary and Gatewood, thank you again for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Brandis. Thank you.
Of course. Up next, one-on-one with the head of the Chicago Teachers Union. Tensions between Chicago's mayor and the leader of Chicago Public Schools are escalating. The Chicago Sun-Times reported Friday that Mayor Brandon Johnson told CPS CEO Pedro Martinez he wants him to leave his position. And also last week, the Chicago Teachers Union House of Delegates issued a no-confidence vote for Martinez. This, as the CTU and CPS are in contract negotiations right now, and the Board of Education just approved a new five-year plan laying out the district's goals. Joining us now with more is Stacey Davis Gates, president of the Chicago Teachers Union. We also invited Chicago Public Schools CEO Pedro Martinez, but he declined this evening. Stacey, welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you all announced just last night that your House of Delegates had taken a vote of no confidence against CEO Pedro Martinez last week at your House of Delegates meeting. Last time I saw this happen was under Forrest Claypool, who was appointed by then-Mayor Rahm Emanuel. What led to this time?
Well, Brandis, right now we have oversized classrooms, kindergarten classrooms with over 35 students in them. We have over 1,200 teacher vacancies currently in the district. We have schools that do not have the type of teacher assistant that we need there. We have bilingual students whose needs are going unmet, and the fallback is Google Translate. We have a list that was just uncovered of schools that will be closed. The combination of all of those things and the lack of movement at the bargaining table contributed to a unanimous vote of our House of Delegates, in fact, and their lack of confidence in the leadership of the Chicago Public Schools currently.
And that unanimous vote, your House of Delegates is what, 500 members?
Oh,
10,000?
We're almost, it was over 600.
600, okay. Here on Chicago Tonight, because you mentioned the list of school closures, just last month, Pedro Martinez reiterated his pledge not to close any schools. As you've mentioned, there have been reports about a potential list of schools that could be closed as the district faces its budget deficit. What do we know about this alleged list of potential closures?
Well, it's not an alleged list. We have the list. We were not supposed to have the list. In fact, there was a document that we received that had other tabs attached to it, which were, you know, encrypted of sorts, and so we had to break that. So this is not something that anyone wanted us to have. And so then thereby receiving it, the question is now, why was this list commissioned? And if this list is no longer an active list, then who made those decisions and why? I think the CEO owes us some explanations. He doesn't deny the existence of the list. In fact, if you look closely at the school district's budget, coupled with the offering of raises that he made through a press release, those things also contribute to a couple of things. The layoff and the codification of over 5,000 educators, as well as furlough days. These two things coupled together beg the question, what does the CEO see as the future of the Chicago Public Schools? And how does he help to create that vision without cuts, consolidations, or closures? The codification of thousands of job vacancies. These things do not help us have a fully staffed, fully funded school community. In fact, it's the opposite of that.
A year ago, first day of school, there seemed to be much more unity between Pedro Martinez, the mayor, of course, and CTU, more than we've seen in previous first days of school when that kind of showing is made. What happened in the last year?
Well, never has there been a time of this level of alignment with the Chicago Teachers Union, the Chicago Board of Education, and the mayor's office. The Board of Education just passed a five-year strategic plan. That plan mirrors our contract proposal, and it also mirrors the mayor's education transition report. All of those things mean alignment. We've never had that before in the history of this. The only thing that's a sore thumb is the CEO of our school district. He's not listening to the Board of Education, who said, yes, we want the vision embedded in these contract proposals, or else they wouldn't have passed the strategic plan unanimously. The confusion and the frustration right now is palpable because Pedro Martinez, a CEO of our school district, says one thing in the public and does quite another thing in his direction of his staff at the bargaining table.
There have been reports that the mayor, as we've said, has called on Pedro to resign. In a statement sent to families and staff on Friday night, Martinez said, quote, "Our students have clearly benefited from the increased stability in our school system. We are confident that our work to date has set the foundation for more success and will increase access to opportunities for all students. We will continue to lead with integrity and transparency in service of our students." Making no mention of these reports that we've heard, but also it sounds like he does not have plans to step aside as of that email that he sent out on Friday night. But what do you make of that, of his response?
Well, I make of this the same thing that I just said, that there is a PR Pedro and then there is another Pedro. Our CEO is doing two things. He's making presentation to stakeholders as if he is in alignment with the Board of Education, with the mayor of Chicago, and with the teachers and the paraprofessionals and clinicians. And on the other end of this, he is saying that all of our alignment is impossible to bring to fruition because we don't have the funding. And then he doubles down and says, and I don't have a plan to win the funding either. Pedro Martinez has to do two things. He has to get in line with his Board of Education, with his boss, the mayor, and with the workers who make the district go. And he needs to create a vision and a plan for how we win the revenue and the funding to offer students what they deserve. Offering them cuts only is not the vision we have for this district, and our union will not go backwards. We've done that already. It doesn't work.
You've also been pointing to some of Martinez's work when he served as CFO of CPS some years ago. What is it that you think about his work then relates to the work he's doing today?
Well, it's the disingenuous nature of his critique of the financial standing of the district, when in fact it is the work he did as CFO and securing and creating the types of loans, toxic swaps, that the district is being oppressed by right now, that he is saying that he won't do. That's fine that you won't do it. And what will you do? And what accountability do you take for putting our district in the type of financial straits it's in right now? To actually act as if he has not been a participant in the financial dysfunction of the district is wrong, and he should be accountable for that. And to also abdicate responsibility for creating the plan that we need to make sure that we have smaller class sizes and a nurse and a social worker in every school, that 100% instead of 20% of our schools have libraries and librarians.
To that point, how does the district pay for that, though? Because we all know the district is facing a budget deficit this year to the point that it has decided against making its pension payment or part of a pension payment that the district normally takes on, and is facing an even bigger budget deficit next year.
You know, I'll answer the question like this. The first day of school, I was at Poe Classico in the Pullman neighborhood, and I met a mother there who exclaimed about her experience there, her child's experience there, and was very happy about the first day of school. She talked about the difficulty she's had as a family getting her child to and from school because that's a selective enrollment school, and she no longer has bus service from Chicago Public Schools. But what she did is that she got another job over the summer. She figured out how to bring new revenue into her household so she can afford to buy a transportation vehicle to get her child to school every day. Pedro can't tell us no and that cuts are okay when Black single mothers every day in the city are figuring out how to make ends meet, how to get their kids to school, and how to do it with a smile. He's got to do more than say cuts, closures, and consolidations.
30 seconds left. Will it take a new CEO to get a contract that does not mean disruption for CPS families and students?
Listen, for as many times as I've sat at a negotiating table, I've never sat there with the CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. They don't come to the table. In fact, they should bring Jim Franzik back to the table. Maybe we can get a deal.
That's saying something if you're offering to bring Jim Franzik back, and I know he's watching, so maybe you guys should call each other.
Maybe.
Stacey Davis Gates, Chicago Teachers Union, thanks again.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Monday night. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for stories you may have missed, like a research project trying to reimagine Chicago's approach to public safety. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Our Spotlight Politics team on former Alderman Ed Burke reporting to prison. And scammers targeting elderly residents out of tens of thousands of dollars, what you should know. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.